glad to have you in here with us. Scott Sales out of the studio this week, and next week he's still going to be gone, but we're going to be talking via phone line. But this morning, in for Scott, he had asked former state legislator Roger Koopman to come in here, and in the second half hour, we're going to have a little chat with a constitutional scholar and former professor at U of M, Rob Nadelson's going to be joining us. So, Roger, good morning. Thanks. Grab this microphone here, buddy. I turned the other one on, so
there we go.
This one's, you know, that's kind of like a Rush microphone.
Hey,
it's not just
golden.
Not gold. That's right.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Roger. For those that don't know and maybe have lost track of you over the since your legislator years, give us a quick update on what you're doing and where things are going in your world right now.
Oh, you know, I'm a businessman. I am involved in two different businesses. Of course, I own Career Concepts, which is a placement service, and that keeps me busy constantly. I've been there mm-hmm. for 31 years. In terms of, you know, political action, I've kind of pulled back a little bit from direct political action. It's tough to be a business owner, run a business, and run for office and serve in the legislature or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I served two terms, and then I decided not to run again and encouraged Mike Moore to run, who, of course, has been an excellent legislator for us. And I've just involved where I can be, right from time to time. I've been, you know, involved in different ways that aren't so public these days.
That's all right.
But here I am.
And here you are, yeah. And could be a hot topic this morning, and let's if you are ready, let's get into it. And interesting stuff.
Hey, Mark, we're going to have some fun this morning, and yeah, I think we will maybe create a few sparks, and nothing wrong with that. You know, I think it's time to step back and kind of ask the question again: what is our university system serving the taxpayers and serving the parents and students of this state well? And one of the things that I did while I was a legislator was I introduced a bill called Intellectual Diversity in Higher Education, and it was sort of patterned after what they were doing in the state of Pennsylvania. And essentially what it did, it was totally non-regulatory, but it encouraged the university system to self-examine.
Okay.
It is what I called a transparency and accountability bill mm-hmm. That said, you know, we don't know if there's a lot of bias here at in the university system. We hear a lot of anecdotal stuff, some real horror stories about the way conservatives and libertarians are treated.
From the students, you heard this?
From the students, okay. We hear this, and from professors as
okay.
well.
Okay.
And it's pretty well known that nationally the ratio of Republican faculty members in the university systems to Democrat is about either somewhere between 4-1 to 10-1 Democrat versus Republican.
Yeah, that surprised me. That's
depending on the department,
right.
You know, but very heavily. But, you know, that being the case, we need to be particularly, you know, vigilant that these students are getting something close to a balanced diet. They're at mm-hmm. least getting exposed to different competing points of view, and they're encouraged to challenge, encouraged to look at different ideas, encouraged to vet these ideas that are put out there, and given the opportunity to read some good books, read different points of view, hear different speakers, mm-hmm. not get marked down or otherwise penalized if they think wrong. And, you know, as I say, there are many, many horror stories out there. So I put in this bill, which basically said, hey, let's just generate a report every 2 years. A report will be created by the university system. Mm-hmm. The whole idea is not legislative solutions.
Was this during your first or second term?
Second term,
okay.
Yeah. But institutional solutions, mm-hmm. the institution itself examining itself and reporting back on the various areas of the university system. Yeah. The legislation basically said it began with the acknowledging that institutional bigotry to certain ideas, values, and philosophies are unacceptable, whether reflected in hiring, promotions decisions, speaking programs, speech codes, course offerings, grading, reading lists, or other aspects of the university system. And the university life, and then the bill declares intellectual diversity is the foundation of a learning environment, that the free exchange of ideas is indispensable to teaching and to a liberal education, and that universities should encourage criticism and toleration of diverse opinions and other opportunities to examine, interrogate, and challenge any claim. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that seems, I mean, that's really radical stuff, isn't it? You know, we expect educators to think that way, not to see their position as one of indoctrinating, you know, students with their point of view, right, or turning them into some kind of radical activists. And but anyway, my bill basically said, you know, let's have the university take a look at itself. Let's have some transparency here. That's, you know, that's basically the fundamental to a free society, is what we pay for in public institutions and what taxpayers are paying for ought to be transparent, and there ought to be some level of accountability. Mm-hmm. The university system is not a sacred cow. You know, and they shouldn't be writing their own performance reviews, so to speak. The public needs to have the opportunity to judge how well they're being served with their own tax dollars. So, anyway, make a long story short, the bill got through committee, but then the university system, of course, got wind of it, and they had testified strongly against it. President Gamble at the MSU, was throwing up all kinds of scenarios of how we couldn't attract good students or good faculty anymore because of this idea of transparency. President Dennison of the U of M was even more reactive and talking about how it would be impossible to govern the university. The student government representatives and lobbyists were just apoplectic over the thing. Wow. One even was so abusive toward me that education committee chairman told him he would not be allowed back to testify before the committee until he apologized to the committee. That's how abusive he was. And they crushed the bill. It got through committee, but it was destroyed on the floor of the House, with every Democrat voting against it and a number of the more liberal Republicans. So anyway, that's just a little bit of background. So, since then, you know, there's not been much talk about this, but the bias goes on. Mm-hmm. And, I might add, I even tried after that, I introduced a study bill, which just said, okay, let's study it for the next 2 years. And the university system saw to it that was crushed. It never even got out of committee. You know, and I'm thinking, what's so controversial here? You know, what exactly is the problem? On the floor of the House, I said, you know, the university system thinks that I'm beating them over the head with something here. It's just because I want to encourage some transparency, some self-examination, and some accountability to the taxpayers, mm-hmm. good stewardship of our tax dollars. And I said, here's what I'm hitting them over the head with. And I held up a flashlight. I turned it on and just flashed it across the room. I said, you know, what is it that has these people scurrying for cover in the darkness? Why is it so difficult for them to imagine, shining a light on what they do? And the bill was destroyed. It hasn't come up since, but the problem certainly hasn't gone away.
It's never been brought up again, right?
Yeah. And the problem has not gone away, and the anecdotal, you know, information that keeps coming from students and faculty members saying that the university system really is a very hostile place for conservative and libertarian and free market ideas, continues to come forward. And yet we don't have any way of really judging how bad the problem is and where the problem is. Mm-hmm. And of course, there are many different areas that you can look into. So I guess what I wanted to share with the listeners this morning, Mark, is a specific example that I think will infuriate them.
Okay.
A specific example that I know of where this is going on, where bigotry within the public university system is so bad that it would make us just kind of hang our heads in shame to think that our tax dollars are going to do this.
Okay,
and it has to do with Rob Nadelson. Now, Rob was a professor at the University of Montana Law School for 23 years. He was attracted there by then Dean Jack Mudd, a Democrat, but a person who was very impressed by Rob's scholarship. He'd already written, I think, one or two books, and he was becoming very well known. Pardon me. He was down in Colorado. And so they hired him to come to the University of Montana Law School. Rob has, of course, over the years, distinguished himself as one of the finest constitutional scholars, not only in the region, but in the country. He's an amazing guy, and he's, over the period of time that he's been at the university, there's, I think, 25 faculty members at the U of M Law School, and he has generated at least a third of the of everything that's been published out of there. I mean, what does that tell you? And including in really high-level law reviews that are very hard to get into. The guy's incredible. Well, for the first 3 years, they left him alone until he began to let his political views, God forbid, be known. You know, I mean, it is almost as if free speech does not apply to a conservative in academe. You know, how dare you publicly express points of view that don't fit with the university's you know, agenda? And I think he first became known for some of the op-eds he was writing and scholarly work he was doing on Montana's high taxes at the time. This would have been back around 92, and where he connected high taxes to Montana's lagging economy, the faculty started ostracizing him. You know, they started by voting against his ability to have tenure. He eventually got tenure, but they, you know, they started just these nasty things, including voting against tenure. Then, as you some will recall, Rob was a leader in opposing the sales tax. That would have been in 93. And at that time, they had on the ballot a sales tax, and it was a, and then there was what we were calling a blackmail tax, and this was all done by, encouraged by liberal Republican Governor Mark Roscoe at the time, where if they voted down the sales tax, then there would be an automatic increase in our, I believe it was our income tax. So one way or the other, you know, you choose your poison. Rob led a campaign not only to oppose the sales tax, but also a petition drive and initiative to also do away with this blackmail, automatic blackmail tax of higher income tax, and he was successful. But the law school went ballistic, and they circulated, get this, a circular letter that just about every faculty member at the law school signed. I mean, these are his colleagues who he sees every day in the halls, just viciously and personally attacking Rob, calling him an extremist. I mean, this is really extreme to stand up for the taxpayers, calling him an extremist, sending the circular letter to every media outlet and every newspaper in the state, writing their own op-ed pieces, and just, you know, personally tried to humiliate and destroy the guy. Then a few years later, he criticized the Supreme Court for the state Supreme Court for some of their ridiculous decisions. The Montana State Supreme Court, I think, has a record for a number of decisions that have been overturned at a higher at the circuit court level. And so he, you know, he expressed opinions criticizing the Supreme Court, and they went after them for that. And they put out another circular letter, and where all virtually all the faculty members signed, and they said he was unethical, and on and on and on. And the former dean now, Mudd, who had since retired, actually had to come to his defense, because all the faculty members were just, again, just trying to ostracize him and embarrass him in the public. And then he talked about how he might vote against, God forbid, the 6 mil levy, you know. And they went ballistic over that, and they circulated a petition against him. The petition, Mark, was posted right in this law school lobby.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, talk about being political.
No kidding.
Because how dare he express a point of view that maybe the 6 mil levy ought to be voted down for a change. These are ways that he was subjected to public humiliation and constant attack, not to mention all the, you know, the vicious emails and voicemails. None of these faculty members ever talked to him personally. It was all just this stabbing in the back stuff to try to drive him out of the law school.
Right.
But I think, you know, some of the things that people don't know that were particularly onerous were the ways the administration, the dean and the provost, the law school itself treated him, the discriminatory way in which he was treated. And I'm just going to give you a few examples real quick, if I may. Okay. And I apologize.
About another minute, and we'll take a break and then get
and then,
to Rob.
Then we can pick up on it. For example, you know, he constantly was fighting to get the benefits that all the other faculty members got just as a matter of course. He'd attend scholarly conferences, often speaking at these conferences, just like the other faculty members would. They'd always get their expenses reimbursed. He was constantly turned down. He would never get his expenses reimbursed. He was kept off of every significant committee, faculty committee, for years and years. And they just wouldn't appoint him. They wouldn't allow him to be on. After 15 years of constantly asking to have a sabbatical, and typically, Mark, sabbaticals are done like once every 7 years, you have a one-year sabbatical. That's typical at the university. After 15 years, he hadn't had a sabbatical, and they kept constantly turning him down. It ended up in 23 years of being there, he had one semester of sabbatical. The difference is these other professors that were going off every 7 years were you know, going off doing something for, you know, poverty law or some political thing, you know. He went to Oxford. He generated six scholarly works while he was there. Most of these professors in a year generated nothing. And yet it took him 23 years to get one semester of a sabbatical. These are typical examples of the way he was treated.
Wow. Let's take a quick break, and we'll get Rob on the phone, and we'll chat with him coming up in just a little bit. Hang on. We'll get a hold of Rob next and let you participate if you'd like to. Hang on. 1450 KMMS and online, KMMSAM.com. I'm Mark Allen. Good morning. In studio, Roger Koopman, former Montana State Legislator. And on the phone, we did get a hold of constitutional scholar Rob Nadelson. And Roger, I'll let you kick things off, and we'll go from there.
Yes, thank you, Mark. And Rob, thanks for joining us the second half of the hour.
Great to be here.
Rob, we talked a little bit about some of the things you faced at the university law school over the 23 years you were there, and really only touched on about a third of the horror stories, and we might be able to touch on some of those before the hour is up, such as your four times being turned down to teach constitutional law when you're the foremost constitutional scholar, certainly within the state and beyond.